right. Yeah, come take a seat. Our next speaker is Klaus Landefeld, who, due to his profound expertise in the IT industry and tech regulation, is a wanted advisor on various international committees. Among a range of roles, he is the vice chair of the management board of ICO, Association of the Internet Industry. Klaus was also part of the official implementation task force of the so-called EU e-evidence regulation, which was proposed in 2017 and completed this year. Since then, the law mandates cross-border access to all sorts of stored information by law enforcement. But how is it going to be implemented legally and technically? And what about potential gray areas? Klaus is here to provide us an insider view on these questions and will hopefully also shed some light on how individuals are actually affected by this new regulation. And let's give him a warm welcome to the stage, Klaus Landefeld.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, hello everybody. Thank you very much for having me. Unfortunately, this is not a repeat of the 36 C3 talk because by now this beast has become regulation. It has become part of EU regulation, and what we're looking at, what we'll look at right now, short agenda, I want to show you what the evidence is about, the categories of data affected, who is addressed by the regulation, when will it enter into force, how does an electronic production order work, and the problems identified, legal challenges, and so on. So what is it about? E-evidence has become de facto law this year with the EU regulations 23/1543 and 1544. One is about the electronic production order itself, so this is about electronic evidence in criminal matters. Let's be clear about this. This is all about criminal matters, so there needs to be some criminal proceeding by law enforcement in one EU member state in order for this to take effect and be applicable. And the other directive is about the designation of a representative. So everyone who has to observe the regulation will need to designate a representative or a legal representative, basically, where production orders can be addressed to. It's not entirely new. The data concerned was available through multilateral agreements before. That means there was a de facto procedure when one state could, or law enforcement of one state could request data from another state or service providers in another state through a very lengthy paper process, basically. It's been around for decades, and it is very slow. It's not digitized. This is about digitizing the process, but unfortunately, it has become a very cumbersome way to do this. But as I said, it was in principle available before. Now the new thing is that the authorities in the target state will only be partially involved. In principle, service providers will send data or release data directly to the inquiring law enforcement agency from another EU member state. So this is all about within the EU, but you will have to answer not only to your local law enforcement from now on, but also for law enforcement from other countries. What is it about? The categories of data are in principle subscriber data, so everything identifying a user, not the traffic and content data. The traffic and content data itself will also be available, but this is all about stored data. So this is not about data in motion. This is not about tapping telephone calls or things like that, or intercepting emails. This is about stored data, but that could be anything up until whatever, a whole cloud instance. So any sorts of data can be requested from law enforcement, from a service provider in another EU country. However, there is a limitation which basically says there needs to be a criminal proceeding of substantial crime. And the way they figured this out is that there needs to be an at least 3-year maximum custodial, a minimum of a 3-year maximum custodial sentence. So the offense needs to have a sentence which is at least 3 years or more in order to be applicable for this. But immediately there was an exception. The exception meaning where it is applicable even for crimes where there's less than 3 years of a sentence. This is cyber-related offenses where there's only electronic evidence, which could be all sorts of things nowadays, but also things which are minor offenses by itself, but it's been done in a mass mass proceedings, which obviously could happen in the internet, could be ransomware attacks, could be spam, could be anything, could be phishing, things like that. And of course, we always have that terrorism-related offenses and offenses concerning sexual abuse and sexual exploitation of children, but that has a higher sentence anyway. Who is addressed? So who will have to absorb this? Typical is providers of electronic communication services. That is nothing new. So everyone doing telephony, doing email, doing instant messaging, things like that, and internet infrastructure providers, which is RIPE, for example. Everyone providing IP addresses, domain registrars, things like that. So this is nothing new. But there is something really new in there, which is information society service providers. This is all sorts of electronic services on the internet. Could be anything. It was limited with two provisions, which says there needs to be some user service about storing data or processing data, or the users need to be able to communicate with each other. This is derived from an from some other EU definition. I have it in here, you don't really need to concern it. This is available for download, everything. I included it for completeness sake. So what does it mean? It is really broadening the field of service providers. Telecommunication service providers, we've always had to do this. We have to do this for decades to deliver data to law enforcement. But now these two provisions of communication between users, it could be anything, it could be comments, right? So how can users of your platform communicate with each other? Also, what means uploading content? I know a lot of football clubs, things like that, where you can upload videos, you can upload pictures. This is all data storage. So all of them are affected now. And uploading data and some further processing could be whatever, picture processing services, could be your heating system, where data is uploaded all the time. Most prominently, of course, video services, where your video camera is storing data somewhere on a cloud service or something like that. This is all affected by the regulation. So every service provider offering a service like this is now part of the regulation. So that means even small and not-for-profit organizations need to concern themselves with this new regulation. There's no exemptions provided for associations, clubs, cloud services, IoT, offsite video storage, gaming services, whatever. No exceptions are in the text right now. There's also no size caps in the text. So it doesn't matter if you have 10 users or 100,000 users, you're affected. When will it enter into force? So the technical definitions and the Implementation Act, and I'll talk about this a bit later, that will have to be finished by October 2024. So in order to so that the Implementation Act truly says, and how will this be implemented, what interfaces, what protocols will be used to release the data, can be implemented in the member states and by the service providers. The actual going live is on the 18th February of 26. And the end of the transition period, by then every service provider will have to name a representative on who to address requests to, ends on the 18th of August 26. So if you really consider that you need to implement something and it needs to be coordinated internationally, this is not a very long time. It's actually a rather short implementation time frame. There is a provision in there which says that designated establishments, or basically the technical entities interfacing with law enforcement, can be used by several service providers, and that is supposed to work for very small service providers or medium-sized enterprises. And I'll come back to that in the end, because I think that might be a hook where clubs and not-for-profits could work together. Statistic collection will also start in August 26, because there's obviously a review in there which states that all the numbers, how often will this be used, is supposed to be fully disclosed. There should be statistics on it and everything. How does an electronic production order work? There is a issuing authority. This is basically law enforcement or a court in a country where a crime was committed. There's a service provider who's obliged to respond to this request by the issuing authority. And then there's something which is called an enforcing authority. This is basically an authority in this country where the service provider is registered, or where the legal representative of the service provider is registered, in order... Well, the principal idea is that if the service provider doesn't respond, this authority, because it's in the same country, can enforce that it is actually happening, that data will be released, so that there's legal means to actually make this work. But there's more, the enforcing authorities have additional tasks which they need to do, which is basically has to do with the protection of the individuals. So the production of the requested data, when you receive a request, you have 10 days to respond to it, in principle. In emergency cases, if there's this is about a loss of life or a threat to life, kidnappings, whatever. So really emergency cases, you have 8 hours to respond. So I'm not so sure how a not-for-profit or a very small organization can ensure that 24/7 they can respond within 8 hours. It's not supposed, obviously this will only happen very seldomly to smaller entities, but who knows? If terrorists or whatever are using your service, are using your club to exchange information, upload videos, could be anything, you don't know. There's also something called a European Preservation Order, but that is not that important right now, but basically law enforcement can ask you, if they can't procure the right signatures by a judge or something, they can basically ask you to save data for 60 days so that nothing gets deleted. Obviously, you can't inform the person this is about, and there's also provisions of enforcement. There's pecuniary sanctions if you don't reply. There could be cost reimbursement if it's in the law of the requesting country. But this is really only relevant if you have huge volume and if there's a lot of requests of that type coming in. So there will be a central directory of service providers, where service providers will register with a central authority. So basically everyone has to do this. It could be a designated establishment, which is an organization basically doing this, offering this as a service. It could be the service provider itself who is connecting with the authorities. It could be just the legal representative, some legal office which is representing an outside of EU service provider. You could have several channels, which will become very important later on. So it doesn't mean that you only have to have one point of contact. You could have a point of contact in every country. That is basically what happens. It's a bit unclear how... law enforcement was obviously under the impression that you could just say, okay, it's this company. But the providers have already made clear that, well, it's not that simple. It could be this company for email, it could be this company for telephony. So it's not just one entity. So we really need something like a routing database where services and entities are routed through in order to address the proper service provider. So there's possible regulation players. Maybe this is getting a bit too much into depth right now, considering the time we have. In principle, the issuing authorities can go directly to the designated establishment and request data. This is happening when there's something called a national case in play. What this really means, I'll tell you in a second. If there's an international case, everything needs to be validated by a court, or at least by a prosecutor, and then it can be sent to the legal representative, but then there will also be a notification in parallel to the enforcing authority. So if you really look at this as workflows, the national case, what does that mean? It means that the crime committed and the supposed perpetrator of the crime are are within the same country or at least considered to be citizens of the same country, but they might be using a service outside of their country. So it's still considered a national case, everything will still be in a national jurisdiction, and so there will be no notification at all. There's no notification supposed to happen if that is really considered a national case and data, it's just data being requested from a service provider outside of the country. That might lead to some problems for service providers considering that, let's use the example of an email address, you have, they think, or law enforcement thinks, that it's someone who's a national of their own country, but this, the person might have registered with you with some other address, and you might consider this to be a national of the country where the service provider is located. And there is no conflict resolution for that right now. Service providers will have to raise an objection and basically say, well, wait a second, this is not a national case. We need to make this an international case. But this is not, it's not part of the process right now. We're trying to get this to become part of the process. In the international case, this is we believe will be the standard case, and most of the inquiries will have to use that have to use that scheme. It basically means a law enforcement requests data from, it will typically be a very large service provider, so think Meta or Google or something like that, and there will be hundreds of thousands of cases where this will be used. So there will be a notification to this service provider, in most cases located in Ireland, and there will be a notification to the enforcing authority, which will be the enforcing authority again in Ireland. Much fun for the Irish to actually come up with an enforcing authority large enough to cope with all these requests, but we'll see how that goes. And if there is no grounds for refusal, if the enforcing authority does not say, no, you can't deliver the data, then the service provider will have to respond within 10 days. Unfortunately, the time for the enforcing authority to tell you that there is no grounds for refusal is also 10 days. So basically, you'll always, as whoever came up with that idea, but that's how it is in the text, meaning you basically have to wait till the last second before you can send out any data. Because the time frames are the same. So you basically have to wait, will there be a refusal raised by the enforcing authority, and then you can send out data. Currently there are discussions that there could be something like a positive notification, basically saying we don't raise an objection, and then you can send the data beforehand, because obviously law enforcement would like to have the data quicker than 10 days, but that's where we are right now in the implementation. If there is a refusal, what happens? The enforcing authority will first contact the issuing authority, that's the green arrow going from the right to the left, and discuss these grounds for refusal, and then they'll either amend the order and to make it processable, or if they don't amend it, the enforcing authority will the provider know. We refuse that, we raise an objection, and then you don't send any data. Again, the 10 days. It's almost impossible to resolve that timing in there. But that's the task which the implementation group is currently considering or looking at right now. What does it mean for the protection of the individuals? I think that is really what is most interesting for this group here. There can be grounds of refusal based on, let's say, the obvious stuff, which is always easy to get into regulation. So, yes, if the data requested are protected by immunities or privileges, meaning if it's a lawyer, a parliamentarian, a priest, but it could also be press, then you're not supposed to deliver this data. This raises the interesting question, who actually knows this? Because service providers typically don't know this. And who will actually raise the objection? Will it be the service provider? Will the enforcing authority have to research this, observe it? That's the big question right now. Some countries have already said, no, we're not going to research anything here. We will just wait if someone else raises an objection. So other grounds for refusal, if the execution of the order would entail a manifest breach of the, basically, the Charter of Human Rights or the EU Charter. Also very clear, because if the release of data would violate your human rights, you're not releasing any data. Again, who will raise that? Who will actually do the legal checking in these bits? Then also one thing is the execution order would be contrary to ne bis idem. Basically, you can't have double criminality, and you can't be prosecuted for something twice. If someone would actually know that you've already been prosecuted for this crime, wherever you know that from, the service provider most certainly won't know that. So they will never raise that. There's this interesting question if the crime this is about is actually an offense in the law of the enforcing state, which could maybe not be the case. Maybe this is only a crime in the issuing country. And we have that cases. We have abortion in Poland. We have the Puigdemont case. And so basically building a new government versus your own government, things like that, which are not a crime in other countries, but in Spain it is. So, and there's any number of cases if you really dive into it, because there is no harmonization of the criminal laws. To a certain extent there is, but there is no really harmonization of the proceedings, the criminal proceedings between the countries. This is vastly different if you really look at the European countries. There are some further protections in there which are interesting if you really read it. So the service provider could basically say, I cannot validate the authority sending me this because the digital certificate is not checkable. That will become an interesting bit, because law enforcement has a huge problem in signing these orders. We've negotiated in the proposal, so this has in the trilogue, it became part of this, that every order needs to be digitally signed, but who is actually a competent authority, how that works, who can sign it, how can that be validated, that this is something which can be signed. It's unclear right now. Also, the service provider could basically look at the timing and say, okay, this is only valid, becomes an order when it is signed, when it's digitally signed, but the actual law enforcement authority might have issued that order beforehand. There might be a time difference up to several days, depending on the country, between them actually writing up that they want this data and someone actually, a judge or something, signing the order. There could be a time difference. And what happens with data which is collected in that time frame? Which time is actually the relevant time frame? If you release data, was that already collected at that point in time? Was it collected afterwards? Was it collected before? That is relevant because you might be liable as a service provider if you just release data which is not covered by the epoch you receive. Also, interestingly enough, there was a political thing which was negotiated in there, which is basically saying if a state, the enforcing authority, is worried that the person might not have a fair trial in the other country, or there's deficiencies in the independence of the issuing state's judiciary. I mean, we're talking within Europe, right? So we're not, obviously the states are not even sure that there is due process and there might be a breach of a fair trial within Europe. Still, obviously we want to help each other out to the point that we send data. So this political possibilities in there, meaning the enforcing authorities, there's a lot of options to actually say, no, you don't deliver this data, but this is a purely political decision, and it means you actually need to look at the individual order. And this is not going to happen for the majority of cases. You need to have some list, some flagging of a person's identity, where you basically say, no, for this person we don't deliver data, and the enforcing authority will actually raise the objection themselves, because the service provider in this case can never raise the objection. So the problems for service providers, there are some problems as well, which is the 8-hour emergency response is possible for small companies. I don't think that any private organization will be able to do this. There's also the it basically says if you act in good faith, if you just release data, you cannot be prosecuted as a service provider. But then they put this in good faith in there. But if you already know there is a protection, if you already know that you can't release the data because the person should be protected or it's not a criminal offense in your country, how can you act in good faith? And so you might open up yourself for litigation if you actually release the data. Still, there are significant pecuniary penalties in there. So it's GDPR style. It might be 4% of your global turnover if you don't respond to requests. So you basically have to ensure that you do respond to requests. Interesting enough, you might receive requests because the requests are only evaluated under the law of the country which issues the request. But there's a lot of stuff which is illegal in certain countries and legal in another country in the processing of a request. For example, in Spain, law enforcement could ask for whatever, the city of Madrid, who was locked into the cell phone network at any point in time. But you could take the whole city. This is completely illegal in Germany. You could never make this request. And there's any number of requests one can envision, which is impossible to answer in one nation state, but is legal in another nation state. Or, for example, in Italy, data is released just on the telephone number. You don't need to know who the individual is. In Germany, you only release data based on the individual. You need to get a request based on a person, not on a telephone number. How do you resolve that? It would be illegal to answer the request just based on the telephone number, release content or traffic data. We don't do that. So there's a number of countries who have higher protection standards, Netherlands, Austria, Germany, so on. And there's a number of countries where you basically release everything normally and don't ask questions, which is Spain, Italy, and so on. It's very difficult to reconcile it. There are conflict of law scenarios where basically you say, well, I can't release that data because third-party laws prohibit me from doing that. So that's, for example, a problem between Europe and the US, where you can't release data. You would have to release it in Germany, but Microsoft, for example, would say, no, sorry, but US law prohibits me from releasing that data, and that needs to be resolved. So it is part of the regulation, but only for third-party countries. Effectiveness of protections, is that actually effective? No, it is not, because the setup of your service provider is completely relevant. If you're located in the same country than your service provider, your enforcing authority will basically check if you have protections in your country. That's normal. You could do that. And the enforcing authority might be able to check that you have protection, that you're a member of parliament, that you're a lawyer, a priest, whatever, a journalist in your country. In the other variant, basically the enforcing authority is someone else. Consider the case in Ireland. I said if you would, law enforcement of country A requests data from Facebook, and the page actually says, "Hey, I'm a parliamentarian in Austria." So Facebook would know, "Hey, there are protections there. We can't release that data right away." That would be the Austrian Parliament would have to agree that this data is released. But the enforcing authority in Ireland would only check if that person is protected in Ireland. So meaning the checks fail through. The data will be released and potentially even stored. Because depending on the local legislation, in some countries, all evidence you gather will have to be stored by law enforcement, even if the case is dismissed and you say, I don't further process that. So it really depends on the setup of your ISP. If the ISP would actually locate a register in all EU countries and route all cases through the nation state where the user is located, this problem would completely go away. But what does that mean? That means that there will be a lot of court cases, because the non-involvement of the user's home country in the setup. It was discussed in the past, but it was abolished in the trilogue. So there was a question of, do we send out two notifications, one to the enforcing authority of the service provider and one to the user's home country? But the states didn't want to bother themselves with that. They basically, it's too much work, we can't do that. And all we really want is that law enforcement gets the data, period. That's really what this was about. So it is an upcoming problem, and the EU courts will have to concern themselves with it. Normally they check, is there a difference between how users are treated? Yes, there will be a difference in how users are treated. So we believe that this will not be upheld if challenged, but it will take several years for this to go away or be amended in a way that it is will become acceptable. There's also something, an interesting question. You might never have left your country. You have a hacked account somewhere. You never contracted with someone outside of your country. You never left your country. You never went to the country which is litigating against you. You might not have committed a punishable offense in that country or in your home country. And there still might be a trial going against you, or at least an investigation against you in that country, which then also requested and got data from you. That is something which we normally don't have. Normally you would have to go to the country where the person is located in order to litigate against that person. Now, with e-evidence, you might actually have to find a lawyer in that country and defend yourself against that, even so you never went there. So what can still be done? This is a regulation which is in effect, it is there. The procedures, as well as the design of the central system where everything is routed through, And if, for example, these things like will there be a positive notification, that is all determined next year. And everyone who is an affected entity can go to their own country's ministries and basically say, well, we need workable regulation. So they can still push in the implementation process that this will become workable procedures and systems. So there are things, trivial questions sometimes, where you say, well, what happens if the enforcing authority is completely overwhelmed? Take the case of Ireland. So, and they don't respond within 10 days. Will the service provider release data? The case was never even looked at. Is the default to release data, or is the default that you don't release data if you don't get a positive notification or any reply from the notification authority? So we believe, as service providers, we believe the default should be no, we don't release data if you haven't even looked at the case. But we know already that building the capabilities in a lot of countries will be very, very difficult. They will have a big issue in actually building the capacity to look at the notifications, to really do the checks. And there's also no registries. Most countries, even the authorities don't know who is a lawyer, who is a priest, who is a journalist, and things like that. There is no central register for these functions. So who will raise the protections? That is still a very big problem. That's beside all the technical arguments that some countries obviously think that digital signage is still some novelty, verifying a request, we even have proposals that they say, yeah, well, individual law enforcement can issue that, but we only sign that centrally. So you basically have a digital signature from some central authority within that country, but you don't really know who was the person who issued that, really the person, or is that person authorized to send the request, because we believe that this will happen automatically. If they send it through their national system, they will automatically sign it and then send it out. There will be no actual responsibility which can be assigned to a certain individual. The providers ask that they can verify everything automatically and digitally, and that there should be capability flag or something like that in there who can actually authorize which type of requests and things like that. So this is what can still be done. Lobby your ministries. And also, I believe we should start a discussion if we can build an association, a federation of non-profit affected entities who will register as these designated establishments, because several service providers could use them. We could have thousands of service providers basically registering through one entity and run this through the national system, because there will be no volume. Most service providers will never receive a single request this huge broad base of tens of thousands of organizations will now have to sign up as a service provider and never had to do this, and they'll never receive a request. So how can we cope that all, at least the non-for-profit organizations will find a way to do this in a way that you don't have to pay a monthly fee or maybe a very small yearly fee or something like that in order to uphold that that requirement? But so this is a discussion I hope we can start or can have. I haven't decided on a way to do this right now, but maybe we can do this within CCC or something like that. I think there will be a good starting point here. All right, yeah, thank you. And I'm happy to, if we have time.
Yes, thank you, Klaus, for walking us through this really complex regulation. We do have 5 minutes for questions, which is why I would first call our signal angel if we have any questions from the interwebs already. And for everyone else, please keep it short. Okay. Yeah, signal angel, you're good to go.
Yes, the first question is, does this list of providers include things like vacuum companies and power inverter companies? Because we've seen talks how they also store data about you.
That's a very good question. The question really is, do they collect and store data, and is that done on the user's request? So we're having that discussion right now. If the appliance would actually collect data, not on the user request, but because they want to sell it or whatever, or to better their product, then this would not be part of it. But if you have it for example, you said power inverters or things like that, sometimes you there actually store data in order to get good profiles on how is your usage, how is it effective, and things like that. So this is data storage and processing, which is explicitly mentioned in the text. And since there are no provisions that this is not covered, we don't see that this is not applicable for that right now.
Okay, thanks. Mic 3 this time.
Thank you. Very similar question. Does it also affect email services run by a company only for their own employees, or like I run a mail server just for my family? Would that also count as a service provider?
No, private individuals are not in there. So it needs to be some organization providing something for their members or users or something like that. So private individuals are exempt. They are not part of the regulation.
So also a company running the mail server for their employees?
You would never have the confidentiality which is required in this, so this is also not part of it, because law enforcement would never accept to send something to a company which would then inform their employees or cover their own assets. Sorry to use that call. So no, they are not part of the process.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mike, one question and short, please.
Okay. Just for clarification, so when I'm a service provider hosting a Mastodon server for other people, I need to respond to requests within 8 hours, so I'm not allowed to sleep for 8 hours. I need to check my email every 7 hours, and there is no protection for national security, so the Spanish police might be able to request service providers for the data of the German Secret Service or the German Witness Protection Programs, right?
Well, it needs to be a criminal offense. So this is, for example, secret services and things like that are out of scope. However, in some countries, they're not completely separated from the rest, like in France or Austria and so on.
For example, the secret service uses a service provider, for example, the telecom, to host data.
What can I say? Yeah, it's, as long as it's a service provider, it's part of it, and they could request it. Who's actually behind it is not part of the regulation. And for your sleep part, yeah, that is the big problem, right? How would you address these 8-hour time frames? But obviously, you can have some notification scheme, and normally, unless you're a very large organization, you would typically never receive a request. But you would need to ensure that you can basically get alerted.
Yeah. I believe we have another question from the internet, Signal Angel.
Yes, in internet is saying, it states in the slide that the data might be required to be preserved until further notice. Is there some provision for how long does that mean, or is that really forever?
No, the preservation order is for 60 days. If you don't receive a proper request, within the 60 days, you can delete the data, and that's it. So there is a very clear Very clear time frame for that. But the requirements to get this are lowered. So basically law enforcement can say, oh, well, we're working on this, protect the data, because you need this, because in a lot of cases it's only there for 7 days or something like that, log data and things like that. So they want you to protect it so that it doesn't get deleted, because it takes some time for them to get it properly approved by a judge. And in some countries you have to get this approval by a judge in a court order, otherwise you can't request the data.
Okay, time for last question from my two. Please make it short.
Yeah, so how this law deals with the authenticity of the data? Like when the law enforcement has it, they have to have like a signature from the, until that they give it to like this external law enforcement. I mean, I ask this question because, for example, in German criminal law, as far to my knowledge, when the law enforcement gets the data, they don't have to do anything about this authenticity, and like a judiciary has this perfect trust to the law enforcement that they didn't do anything with the data.
Yeah. This is a very good question, because the question is also about how do you send data? Is it encrypted? Is it authenticated? Is it signed? And will it be usable in court, right? And that is, so you, as a service provider, you basically represent that this is, to the best of your knowledge, the data which was asked for, and you have to sign up. You could be asked as a witness to represent that this later, if there is a court case, right? We're talking about collecting evidence for a criminal proceeding right now, which doesn't mean that this is exactly what will happen in the court case, right? So there could be an extension there where you're asked as a witness to represent that this is really the data which you collected to the best of your knowledge. But it's an interesting question, because the system which is proposed right now is even incapable to use to be used for huge amounts of data. For example, we're discussing a side channel on to how, for example, cloud data could be released, because the system which is currently in place or considered to be in place is limited to 1 gigabyte of data, and there's a lot of cases where this is a joke, right? So we won't cover it. So there will be separate channels and separate systems, and they all have to validate that the data is authentic and that it is signed for on this back channel as well. So the providers they have to sign everything they release, all the messages, all data they release needs to be signed.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Thanks for the answers. I know there's a lot to discuss, many questions, but our time is over. Thanks again, Klaus. I believe you will be here for a couple of minutes.